I just want to check, how many people heard about modeling? How many people heard about micro development? How many people heard about dynamics? Wonderful. It's exciting already. Because it takes me 3 years to try to teach an introductory longitudinal study in SUNY Albany. It takes 3 years. I still couldn't, because there's not many people interested about it. But you see, when I see the so many people's hands raised up, I thought, well, it's going to be a very dynamic group today. Okay, I have to ask again, how many people do actually the modeling? How many people actually do the micro development study? And how many people actually do the dynamic research?
Actually, no, a few of you are doing relevant stuff for your project.
It is very normal dynamic phenomenon, just because, so think about how many people go to movie so many times, but hardly we make the movie, right, in our life. Okay, let's start with something like I always show in some of the class like that. It's show you a movie. And even though we don't make the movie yet, but some people probably already see it. But I like to people see it so that you can have the feeling of it. What exactly what I'm talking about, why I'm getting a little bit excited.
This is a hostile planet, but it's the one that we know is home. We call our world the Earth, yet two-thirds of its surface is covered in water. The seas are the most turbulent environment on the planet. And the most treacherous. The power of the seas pushes the limits of human understanding. Wind makes waves, the waves meet currents. The currents violently brush against the land. The resulting seas can be dangerous and unpredictable. Their energy is vast and chaotic, constantly moving, endlessly threatening. For seafarers caught up in these tumultuous waters, it's dramatic. On the wrong day, it can be final.
A hole in the ocean, where the ocean virtually opens up and the ship plows straight in, and an enormous wave collapses on the deck of the ship like a block of flats.
Water weighs over 60 pounds per cubic foot. Normal waves can be up to 50 feet high and travel at over 40 miles an hour. If two 50-foot waves were to coincide, their energy would be catastrophic.
The size of the normal wave is double, and you double the size of the peak and the drop, and that is your abnormal wave. We are talking of tens of thousands of tons of water. It will cause incredible damage.
In fact, is a Poseidon adventure for 211 passengers and crew.
Waves are born in the deep ocean when the sun stirs the wind and the wind brings the sea to life. Waves produced flow through the sea, like a breeze through a field of corn, rolling steadily forward while the water itself remains almost unmoved. As storm winds blow across the open ocean, the waves get longer and higher. The larger waves outrun their smaller companions, generating a train of big waves. The energy transferred from the wind to the waves escapes only when the waves break on a distant shoreline into surf.
Well,
Well, actually, it started down here on this beach. Over a period of 3 or 4 days, I saw half a dozen golf shoes, and I said, well, how could these be here? Was it like a tidal wave on a golf course or something? And then I put two and two together and said, oh, they must have come off a container ship.
Sure enough, the shoes had been part of the cargo of a Korean container ship. 6 months earlier, it had been caught in a Pacific storm 2,000 miles away. A dozen containers spilled overboard. 80,000 shoes floated free. For one oceanographer, it was the opportunity of a lifetime to plot in detail the Pacific current.
So I started poking around, and if you look inside a sneaker, there's a number. If you give me that number, I can trace it to the container which it fell overboard. I learned from beachcombers where they were washing up, and I knew a colleague of mine had a model that could predict these, but I hadn't talked to him for quite a while. I faxed him the information of where and when the spill occurred. I asked him to run his computer model, and it was dead on. It was a blind test.
What the model did was establish the exact course and speed of the Pacific Current from the point where the cargo had gone overboard to each part of the coast where the 80,000 shoes washed up. 1,000 containers are lost at sea every year, so many that they have become a major shipping hazard. But now, they also offer the possibility of a breakthrough in ocean science. Confirmation came with the loss of another vessel.
There was a ship that caught on fire. It was called the Hyundai Seattle. They said something like 50 containers fell overboard, and there was a shipment of 38,000 pieces of hockey equipment in two containers. So my colleague ran his computer model, and it showed that the hockey gloves should wash up on January 30th after the spill. And I looked up and I said, that's today.
I was on the beach and I found a couple of shin guards and some gloves. So I called up Kurt and I said, Kurt, I think I've got something for you. And he said, what, you find some hockey gloves? Could knock me over with a feather. So they had used their model, and their model came out within days of when I found things. It was pretty good.
What the model shows is a complete clockwise circulation of the North Pacific's waters every 7 years. But the movement is not a regular one. It has mysterious fits and starts.
The seven-year cycle in the Pacific operates basically like the hands on a clock, and the hands go around in about 7 years. It's just not very steady. Your clock, the hour clock goes around very, very steady, but the North Pacific Ocean, it would be as if one time around it was 3 hours, and the next time around it took 30 minutes. It's a very unsteady clock, and we think that has a lot to do with the world's climate.
The oceans and the atmosphere are intimately related, and both are affected by the Earth's motion. As the Earth spins on its axis, it causes both air and water to twist into spiral patterns, or vortexes. The ocean currents follow these patterns.
If you look at all the information, you find out that the oceans are pretty organized. The surface waters have this wonderful vortex structure, and it's really beautiful to behold.
The might of the oceans challenges humankind. The seabed is scattered with the vessels of those whose fortune failed them. Yet in the ocean's vastness, we find reassuring rhythms. The beat of the waves, the flux of currents, the surge of the tides. Intricate but familiar patterns that were already ancient when our life on Earth began.
questions, thought. Well, we are in the school of education. You know, they talk about ocean dynamics. If I want to learn ocean dynamics, I'll go to MIT rather than go to Harvard, right? So are there any thoughts? All the messages today I'm going to talk about, actually, it's already in this little clip. What do you think?
I actually gave a talk last month at the Oceanographic Institute at Woods Hole. They called me up and said they wanted to know about brain and cognitive development because although they were studying things like this, they wanted to be more effective educators. A little bit of an aside, but it was kind of a fun to go to a group who knew about this kind of stuff, where if I mentioned something like dynamic systems, they didn't look with blank stares, but said, yeah, great, wonderful.
If I would be a good chance to be invited to the WUK Board, I'll be very, very honored, because that's the cradle of the Nobel Prize winner there. You know, it's a very unique academic unit there.
Well, I just thought that the obvious analogy between this oceanographic study and education is that the factors predict wave patterns seem like they're all mysterious and really hard to find the cause and the source of, but you can actually do these imaging studies now, and you can really predict a lot of things that we once thought were really unpredictable and just kind of out there, and I think it will carry over to studies in education and with children.
Wonderful. French writer Hugo mentioned about once, the ocean is huge, but the sky is not huge as the ocean. The sky is huge, but the human mind is even huger than sky. And then we talk about today's class about the cognition, education, and the brain. This little brain here compared with a huge ocean, which one is more complicated? Nothing happened here. There's ocean in a huge wave there, you know. Which one have the killer waves?
I just had something that I thought that maybe we should think about as we talk about this, and that is that our bodies are like 75 or 80% water. And just to think that, you know, if the planets can affect the ocean this way, you know, maybe our bodies and, you know, like our cerebral spinal fluid, you know, other aspects of our physiology are affected by planetary motion. So there might be some probabilities to how we function too.
I think you already mentioned about some butterfly effect. You know, some tiny little something happened and it will affect something over a long, long time. There's a research indicate there's about more than 100 people die because of the genetic changing of the Earth, just because of that. Because every 2,000, the South Pole and North Pole turn around. We're getting to that turn around. And so that's very wonderful. I think I would like to talk about the three messages that are very important. I like to deliver a little bit. One is a dynamic phenomena. What is a dynamic phenomena? Dynamic phenomena is changing all the time. It's very complicated, but it can be predicted by some hard work. And a dynamic phenomena is very pervasive everywhere. Think about anything. They are not dynamic at this moment in this class. The second thing, the dynamic is very complicated. Well, if you think, I'm going to go to the cafeteria to buy a coffee, do I need to build a model and to predict this kind of behavior? Because that's too simple behavior, right? We don't need to do that. But if we go to Seattle, to San Diego, attend the AERA, therefore we need to take a plane. More sophisticated transportation tools. So dynamic phenomenon is not a simple phenomenon. It's a very complex phenomenon. Then the three things is dynamic is very important. because you cannot ignore. It's all everywhere. It's very complicated, but also very important, especially for the human, for the humans, for the education research, for psychology research, for the environmental research. For these three key features of dynamic phenomena, therefore, the second message I like to, second thing I'd like to mention about here is dynamic modeling. How do we study the dynamic phenomena? There's one kind of tools that we can use it to study the dynamic phenomena. So the dynamic modeling have also have three features. Number one, it's very promising. Number two, it's very challenging. How challenging it is? Could take about 20 years could build a PRD effect. And then build model will talk about one or two years, but take 20 years to think about PRD effect. And how challenging it is? Paul Van Geer, once I had a dinner with Paul Van Geer, Paul told me, Jen, if you want to study dynamics, you need to be get used to belong for at least 10 years. Well, I have to think about it. However, it is very much needed. Why? For example, the MIT Dynamic System Dynamic Program people graduate, the starting salary is that. And basically, they come to the classroom, say, come to Boeing, you know, IBM, come to our company, build a model first, solve the problem. The third message I think besides the complexity behind dynamic modeling, dynamic phenomena, the last thing that today's talk relates to the Michael's class last time and also related to Michael's modeling lab later up this class, is really a kind of show, a case that can show how do we modeling Michael developed. How do we modeling dynamic development? So basically the class will be divided into two parts. One is the class case presentation, another part is the case discussion. Okay, let's go to the SAS. How many people learn to use SAS? Great, wonderful. How many people use the other statistic programs besides SAS? Wonderful. Well, SAS turned out to be very, very interesting software. There is the statistics of the based on, I go to the library, if you go to the library, look at the course evaluation, you will find this word. It was a humiliating experience. SAS. And I checked from, before I decided to go to dissertation, I checked the course evaluation from 80 to 96, about 60 years. So it looks like the substantial number of SAS learners has experienced various degrees of the difficulty, frustration, and anxiety. They are crying. Literally, they are crying. One of the founder of the American Psychiatry Association founder, she cried. However, other students success and even excel. So why is it so difficult to learn? Well, probably because of students. Because the students of the group of people here are not very motivated. They are not smart enough. Or they don't have the basic knowledge to learn some of the computer software. None of them, right? Well, second reason, well, teachers, lousy teacher. Terry Tillman, think about, you know, and Judy Singer, John Willett, and Suzanne Graham, those teachers. And teaching fellow is lousy, probably. Like a Gabby, you know, wonderful TF, but can we adopt those people? No, right? Then third reason probably is SAS. Because it's a specific computer program, you know, has a weird interface or have a specific kind of a cognitive challenging the built-in, so no people can figure out easily. Why? So the second thing I was thinking about is to how to study. If I really, I'm thinking, you know, with so many studies that after study, putting in the laboratory and sleep for forever, but I like to do some study that it really can solve some puzzles, especially 15 puzzles, years of puzzles. How do I do? I collect the data? How do I design a study? And how do I analyze it? How do I interpret it? Whether this kind of study is going to be presentable in the EIA or dissertationable or degreeable. So those are the questions that I facing at that time, back 1995. So I asked people to do an exercise a little bit. Find your partner, your neighborhood, very close neighborhood, your immediate neighborhood, and take one exercise here. The first page, write down your name and your partner name, and the task one and the task two. Basically, you want people have to look like sit in front of the computer, and then you think aloud, and the second one take notes. Or three people can, two or three people work together. So you have 10 minutes to finish this study, okay? As long as you go through at least the five steps, I'd like to you to look at this task two, to think about if the data you, this is the data you're going to have, how do they analyze it? So if you go through at least the five steps of using computer, for example, SPS or SS or Excel, and then you go to task two to think about how can you analyze it. Okay? Time's up. Now, let's bring some of the ideas here. How do we observe this kind of microscopic kind of step-by-step thing? How do we observe? Well, one way we do already is using step-by-step, just take notes step-by-step, right? And of course, I noticed some of the people who you actually using open computers, that would be the best way to open and then let two or three people observe, right? What is the step-by-step? Otherwise, it's not very easy thinking detail, step-by-step. For example, using your right hand, the fingers and move the mouse and point the icon, click the icon, open the files, and you know that kind of detail. Probably it's not very easy, but if you ask people to open the computer and do it, and you can take notes step by very detailed, right? But actually, the best way is to videotape the people working on learning the computer software. Therefore, you can have very detailed kind of step-by-step kind of procedure. Where the problem people had a problem, what kind of mistake people have, and then what kind of conversation people have to solve the problem. So that is one thing about the, how to observe the microdevelopment data. Here's a hand there.
I was wondering, we talked about how to observe, I was thinking about videotape, but would it also be possible, since we're working on computers, to record keystrokes and use of the mouse? Is that observation or is that data collection, or are they the same thing?
Actually, that's a wonderful, excellent point. It's called computer-based research. You know, right now, it takes too many time to collect the data. But if you are working with a computer, and a computer can automatically record the data step by step, but actually, there's quite a few research already going on in that direction. It can save huge amounts of time and have a high-quality data. Wonderful point.
Well, and then just another question. Yeah. Computers, I assume, are sophisticated enough to then take multiple examples, so a bunch of different people's trials in keystrokes, and sort of see maybe where in the pattern, either where there's I only know the arts and education words for these things. Is there resonance across where the keystrokes are the same, or is there a lot of divergence between different sets?
Yeah, I think you already move to the second step, how to analyze the microdevelopment, right? How to analyze, how to make sense of it, how to find the pattern, like using the word you're using, how to find the pattern of it. Well, I have to say that for the microdevelopment study, collecting data at this moment is well established. We have many, many studies and collecting this microdevelopment data. So it is intense observation. And it's manageable, and it's also straightforward. You're just videotaping or let computer record every step by step. But before that sounded a little bit challenging, but actually tagged data is not very complicated. But right now data analysis actually is a little bit challenging, a little bit intriguing. Okay, so how many people think about some of the data analysis method? How to analyze the data, use like step by step, this kind of sequence. What kind of method are you thinking you can analyze it to make sense of it, to find the pattern of it? Some people mentioned about regression, right? If I have the time there and have the performance level, I can see the performance, whether it's regression toward the mean or regression towards, yeah, that would be the one of the way to analyze the statistic method. Are there any other way you can think about to analyze the data, to make sense of data, to find the pattern? Yes, both of you, yeah. So you can group different kind of behavior, right? Yeah, and then find the grouping them together.
Yep. The end.
Yeah. This is the way to collect the data, huh? Okay. How about you? What do you think about?
I was just going to ask, like, well, there's also we could consider fitting nonlinear regression models.
Yeah. That's very.
There's more to it.
Yes.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah. Could be, for example, this first step could be a very lousy, but I'm getting used to it, and I'm tuning into this kind of mode. Therefore, the second, the third, the first step is quite a quality, very good quality, right? And later, probably, I can find a challenge again, and then the performance goes a low level.
But a question kind of along these lines, I'm very new to statistics and everything, but is it? Do you lose something when you transform the data and apply a linear model?
Yes.
Is there something that you might see if you're able to fit a non-linear model that you don't see? If you're
that's a quite an insightful comment.
So,
do you losing information when you analyze data? Actually, yes. We're losing a lot of data at the expense of the trying to find some of the patterns. But what kind of data you are willing to lose, what kind of data you are not willing to lose, that's up. Okay, here I'd like to just talk about my dissertation study. It is about a pattern changing rather than linear progression. Pattern, linear is there. The dynamic analysis of microdevelopment in learning computer program. So this title actually carrying four major messages. Number one, the conclusion is pattern changing rather than linear progression. Number two, the way of analyzing data is dynamic analysis. Number three, the way of collecting data, I'm using microdevelopment data method to collect data. And also the task is to learn a computer program. So that's all about this study. But actually, it took my 5 years, me 5 years to write this title. When I come to the GSE 95, I have a wonderful idea. I thought I'm going to study structural equation modeling of language proficiency and academic achievement of immigrant students. It's a wonderful idea, right? Good topic and sophisticated statistic method. So this, in the post-seminar, and I'm thinking, you know, what kind of direction I like to go. So one is cross-cultural study, another is technology, computer, human development. Catherine Snow write a very little notes on my paper, small essay, say, learning computer and human development is an intriguing idea area. Intriguing. I go to dictionary and find it. Intriguing means it's just funny. It's not very easy to handle. Well, I thought this is good. this is a good way for me to jump in and learn something. So I started to focus on that direction. And then I being the TF of the Tarantino, and I find myself and learn a tremendous difficulty to learn SAS. And also I find so many people feel so difficult to learn SAS. So then I go to the library and look at the evaluation, course evaluation. I found, no, this is not what happened today. It's happened over more than 15 years. So I thought, well, this is going to be something interesting study I like to do. Make sense of it. So then, in the second year, Kurt mentioned to me, say, Jen, look at, there's some study about using microdevelopment analysis. At that time, I never heard about microdevelopment, but when I read the article Kurt gave to me, I thought, oh, this is a pretty good idea, micro development, you know. And then next year, I thought, the summer of the second year, I thought, I have dissertation. I have a wonderful research there. I'm using Judy Singer, John Willis, individual growth modeling. I take for the first year, and I focus on how to learn SAS. And I do some pilot study. I thought, I'm all set. I'm finished. Probably I can finish within 3 years. At most, 4 years. I can graduate with my diploma. But that summer is a disaster. Because the data I collected, and I tried to analyze, make sense of it, the pattern looked like it's just fuzzy. It's just messy. Very messy. Yes?
What do your data look like? What data are
you? I will show you later. That's a very good point. I interview people and then take down the notes step by step. I find that how can I use this individual growth modeling, try to find a linear line of learning? It's just they are crying, they are complaining, you know? Yeah, that's a real study. Well, and then Kurt told me, say, well, there's some method available. It's handling some complicated, messy data. You can try. So I read some articles, I tried it. Wow, that's very sophisticated. So I ended up learning something, go to MIT to take 1 year of course and also learn by myself. I found, well, that's I opened some kind of a Pandora box, you know. but actually, the data design is already started. I collect data for one semester. Every people knock my door, want to participate in the study, because that's good study. Because I finish my SAS project, you know, and then I pass the course, and at the same time I can get help for free, right? So knock my door, you know, want to join in my study. So that's kind of appealing of research, you know, real research, hard research rather than cold research. And then when I started that, I find out that this is something very promising. It's not very completely mature. How do I do? And that time, Paul Wenger told me, well, dynamic system is not have to be one specific model method. Actually, it's a very wide variety of method. And so, therefore, I changing my title into dynamic analyzer. I mean, whatever method available to help me to understand the dynamic phenomena, I'm going to call it dynamic analysis. I'm going to use this, whatever available, I'm going to make sense of it. So, in the 2000, I finish the data and write up the conclusion. 5 years. To be specific, this kind of study, I ask two research questions. One, what are the pattern of learning sets? What pattern look like? And the second is, what is the mechanism that underlies this kind of patterns? Explain why. The first one focuses on how. The second one try to address why. So the research design is very simple. 30 students, I only take 30 because I couldn't handle more. Even more people knock on my door. So therefore, 30 people from actual class participate in the study. And the task is very easy too. It's complete the full SAS project that's required in the course and with my help. And then the procedure is also very simple. In the beginning of study, fill one page of the souvenir, a questionnaire, saying who you are, you know, what kind of experience you have, have you used SAS before, things like that. And then observe over one semester. Whenever SAS assignment come in, and then come into my current library, and then working with me, and videotaping whatever happened. And the end, which is, I think it's close to Christmas, holiday, and finishing the data, and give every people a Christmas gift as appreciation. The measurement is a little bit complicated. That I have the sequence of this kind of step-by-step procedure thing data there, but I try to figure out what kind of step is high level, and what kind of step is low level. For example, if some people say, well, I need to put I forgot about what mean by edit. You know, if you type edit after the dollar sign. And if the people have that kind of question, basically means this person don't understand the meaning of edit. Therefore, those kind of level is we call the sensory model system level, and then the score will be assigned 3. And if some people just typing edit and showing that he know exactly what I mean by edit, is open the file, editing thing in the data file or sets file. That kind of means that this person, the performance of this person, actually he understands the meaning of the editor and can type this the command correctly. So that kind of level of performance, the complexity of this performance could be a little higher. But for some people saying, just typing edit space project 1 dot sets, like this kind of typing very frequently and know exactly what this person will do, then we'll code it at a high level of it. Yes?
Did you come up with a key that, or like a rubric before you started? Like, I mean, you like used maybe a couple pilot
so that is
papers to come up with like what the different commands meant
to
help you code?
This is almost like the simplest version of rubric or a coding book, a coding system. How do we code the data? You write the steps that look at the data. How do we code it? It's a high level of performance, a low level of performance. So based on some of the pilot study and also based on the theory, I developed this kind of coding system and coded this kind of step by step performance.
But how did you decide what was at a certain level? Because to me, Control Z plus exit, I don't see how that's all that difficult.
Yeah.
I mean, like, how did you make those decisions?
Yeah, I think one more class to reflect what I'm doing. But one thing I like to say, it's just like speaking. For kids studying, they probably just say first thing the unique they can speak is one word, I. And later, I am, and later, I am a student. Later, I am a student, and she is a teacher. And then later, and from the unit of the information process, from the very small to the relatively large, including discourse, paragraph, paper. So that kind of cognitive complexity. We can hardly assume that I'm doing very, very good job. This is an excellent scale coding system. Have no doubt at all, right?
But one more point. In fact, that's not a very complex level for you guys, if you look at the best you can do, right? That's only a representational system. 8-year-olds can do that. So one of the things this says is to do those levels doesn't require very much sophistication, though you still have to learn to do it, and that might take some time.
I think follow the curse comment is that for the adults, we were thinking whatever we do, we have to be very smart performance, but actually different from the children's in the different domain, we perform sometimes excellently, and sometimes another domain we perform poorly. For example, we are the excellent teacher, but same time, we are the lousy text returner. Right? Then using this kind of scale, and look at the step by step, you know, you have 5 steps, right? We can look at the step by step, and look at this different level. I can build this kind of microdevelopment trajectory to show that this person, how many steps this person took, and at what kind of level this person performed, and whether how many assistance this person needed. And a data analysis focuses on 2 research questions. Number one, I'm using topology analysis of individual trajectory, like some people already mentioned. I group them together, see which one is similar with someone, and which kind of trajectory is similar with another kind of type of. So group them together, see the difference and similarity. The second research methodology addresses research question 2, that is dynamic growth modeling, based on Paul Van Geer's research. But at the beginning, I try a very traditional, but also it's very sophisticated analyze method, that's repeated ANOVA. So as you can see here, we have 30 students, project 1, project 2, project 3, project 4, and then there's a mean, you know, every pool together, and look at the mean, and I can see beginning at 5.40, and go up a little bit, go down a little bit, go up a little bit. And this is a standard deviation of 30 student performance across four projects, as you can see here. And at the beginning, the difference among students is quite large, and then narrow down, up, and narrow down. In short, it is a pretty good way to think about the people's performance progress. The difference among students, the gap among students is narrowed down. However, what does this mean here? That's a disaster, right? It means that, well, look at this progress overall. But statistically, this is a 95% of chance that could be due to some random noise. That means in this school, number one this year, right, again, and a group of high motivated students, and the teacher taught by an excellent teacher, Terry Tivnan, working with another excellent other TFs like me, for over one semester, at the end, the result tells us basically none of them learn that much. So what's wrong? Well, there's one possibility is that if we average things together, and actually we lose some significant information. For example, if people work on one project sequence, and a second project, a third project, fourth project, so average the individual performance over four periods, I get a mean. And I second the people, and there's another mean. Third one, another mean. And more and more, and then I average the mean again. So you see that this kind of double aggregation actually loses a substantial amount of information, so that the very sophisticated, dramatic kind of learning process, turn it out. Get it. That's the disaster I have in the 1996 summer. How do I do? Okay, I will analyze the microdevelopment trajectories. As you can see here, these are the, you know, project one student one, project one student 20, project 20, same student, but in the project three, and project four, this is the second, another subject. So look at this kind of trajectory. I find the first kind of trajectory is called a chaotic trajectory. She is a very, very nice woman and major in French literature. Very nice, always willing to help. But however, when she's starting even the project three, this person have one, two, three, four, five, so many helps through the whole process. And also performance level goes down, up, and down, up, and down, up. It's just, and also take 89 steps to finish the one project. It's just like working, it's not a big step. It's a very small step, and I have a lot of problems there. So that is a very chaotic kind of learning process. Very confused. The second person, actually same person in the project one, she, you see, have one, two, three, four, five, six, seven, half, and also, you see, there's a good performance at some point in the middle. So we can consider this kind of learning process is called oscillatory trajectory. It's fluctuating around some levels. It's learning, but it's not a very there yet. The third one we call equilibrium trajectory. She is Harvard Law School, no, Harvard Business School software programmer. I'm not sure this is really, and she, at the beginning, she only made one mistake and then saw her performance. So we look at the 30 people, 120 trajectories, and we can see here, for the people who saw the performance at the beginning have six people, but later at the project four, we have almost about 15. But for the people who are learning, struggling, but still learning, is that at the beginning it's about 16, 17, 15, and then drop to the 9. And for the people who are frustrating, struggling, and beginning have about 7, and later have the 6. So that is the kind of dynamic picture landscape that we can see among the 30 student class of 4 project. Yes.
And what projects were students struggling? Were there some correlation between the problems they came up with and between where they were struggling?
This is a very deep question. One is that these 4 projects, they are very different. One is from the mean, calculated mean. Second is the t-test. A third one is ANOVA. A fourth one is a regression. However, this study focuses on the basic procedure of using SAS. Edit the data file, edit the SAS file, edit the comma file, submit the comma file, and open the logger file, open the list file, and print out results. 7 steps. So no matter what kind of software you're using, you always have to click the icon of the program. So that could be considered number one. So this study focuses on the procedure, basic procedure, rather than the statistical content. Therefore, I control the possible practical effect. Because people can practice over it, you know. At the same time, we can see what exactly people understand this kind of basic procedure of using SAS. And second thing, second idea that based on your question is that what kind of specific people question people have, what kind of specific difficulty people have, but look like it's very difficult to identify. This is something I need to do later further, but at this moment, I don't see any clear pattern. One student have to be struggling with one kind of issue. But one thing is very clear is that people had struggling with the submitted comma file. Why people always forget about submitted comma file? But that's related to a lot of other issues related to the architecture of SAS program. So the question now is that, okay, let's see, this is our order, you know, one project over one semester. How about we look at a different project from project 1, 2, 3, 4, same person over one semester to look at what kind of micro development trend, whether some people learn better or learn worse or maintain that kind of initial learning level. So ending up, we find a 4 kind of trends. Number one is very disorganization trend. She is very nice. Again, the major is French literature. And you see the problem here, and it's basically, it's more and more confused. So that is a very, very disorganized this kind of trend. The second kind of, it's called a regression trend. She actually is a top law school PhD student. So the beginning, she's very clear about things. And later, third and last project, it's just a disaster. And then the third kind of trend is called improvement trend. So she actually right now in the Columbia University pursued the degree. It's beginning, she actually from Japan. She's very struggling at the beginning. Never used SAS, never used computer even. And right now, she's learning very fast, and she's performed very well, and performed very well. And the last one, that's Harvard Business School person. You know, that's just a piece of cake for her, I guess. So we ended up, there's about 6 people who are very, very confused. And we have about 30% of people actually go regression. 30% getting more and more confused. And then we have 50% people actually show the substantial improvement. And we have 10 people actually basically it's just a too easy task for them to learn. So that solved the problem of first research question, what kind of micro development pattern? And then why?
Okay, can I just pause?
Sure.
I want to go, if you can go back to that, that's fine. It's just, this is a really good teacher, Terry Divnan, in a very well-designed course. The other one, the percentages will be fine. And that it's just really striking, I think, that only 50% of the students and 40%
stayed poor or got worse. Teaching isn't easy.
Well, learning even more challenging, right? Yes.
Is it possible that any of the people who showed improvement just became better at following the directions but not at all any better at understanding what they were doing?
Yes, that's possible. Yeah, we can build a model to predict that.
Yes, are these the same trials that you had in your paper, Always Under Construction, co-authored with Kurt? Is this
yes.
the same data?
That paper based on six people, that's the whole data.
But is it, it's a different set of data? Same set. So these data have support that's given through the process, throughout the process of learning, is that correct?
Yes, get a support.
Okay.
Me.
Okay, that was you.
Yeah.
And how does that, how does the support relate to these four different bars here?
That's
are you going to get to that?
Yeah, that's a very good question. I deliberately saved to the end of the study, but I have to answer right now.
That's fine.
The support is actually a restricted support. It's not like I'll give you 1 hour lecturing and let you do the SAS program, no. There's two conditions. Number one, I only answer the question when people ask me questions. No questions, no answers. So therefore, I can have data, right? And also, I know what exact problem people have. And also, I only give the relevant answer to the specific questions, no more, no less. So with this two conditions, therefore, this kind of help is really maximize the observation of the people the learning, and at the same time, help people provide us really actual help during the research process. Yes.
What factors actually determine whether or not a student is going to learn or not going to learn? Is there a way of differentiating between the two?
Learn or not learn?
Yeah.
Well, I think she is going to not learn. Well, this Japanese woman definitely learned a lot. And this Tufts law school PhD did not learn.
What makes them not learn?
Quantitatively, we can see, for example, this one definitely needed less help. The performance is high level, and the sequence of the finished task is 37. For this one, you know, same seven step of using SAS. This one needed 80 steps to finish, needed more than 20 helps during the process, and there's quite a few lousy performance. So look at it visually. Not only graphic, quantitative, but qualitatively, visually, you can see this learning curve is very, 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 very substantial. Let's move on to explain why. Why? I'm not sure, but I know this learning process has several features. Number one, it's a construction, co-construction by two people. One is learner, another is help. Learner and help. A second thing I know is that your previous performance, your future performance, is always the something of your previous performance. That's number two. Number three is that learning actually get a lot of help from help. However, help does not learn that much from learning. Therefore, it's called asymmetric learning, help, asymmetric co-construction of two people. So therefore, based on the Van Gils mathematic equation, I know everyone can understand this very quickly, but let's just tell us, these two people working together is a function of the several things. And we assume this program, this model is a good one. Just like assume our measurements is very good one, same way. And then here is a simulation. So I use that model. I set up the growth rate is 2.60. Therefore, I can see this chaotic trajectory. And I set up code every other variable constant, changing lower the growth rate to 1.96, I can see this kind of oscillatory trajectory. And use that model again, just like using the model to predict the golf or soccer shoes, you know. I'm using this model, and I can simulate this kind of equivalent kind of trajectory. This three similar trajectory visually match with this three kind of chaotic observed trajectory. Chaotic trajectory, oscillatory trajectory, and equivalent trajectory. So, what does that mean? I learned two things. Based on this model, I think this learning process actually is a dynamic process of the dynamic co-construction, because the model is based on the co-construction. Number two, method development trend. Why we have different kind of method development trend? Because of dynamic transition from one process to another, and due to the change in growth rate. You know, for the one project, this kind of method development trajectory is the dynamic process. And for the macro development trend over one semester, this kind of transition actually is from one kind of to another kind. How to interpret? Well, traditionally we're thinking this is a good student, growth rate high, average student, and a slow student. And also before getting to GSE, actually they learn a lot. Some people learn a little bit, actually some people actually learn very little. And some people can learn fast, some people then learn not very fast. So these two initial level and also growth rate. But actually, we can interpret the microdevelopment data in this kind of pattern changing model. Everybody know about Vygotsky theory, right? About zero positive development. So let's see, we have three kind of a zoom. This is a proximate development zoom with help. You can perform it. Future development zone actually with help, you just can't do it. It's beyond your development level, and this is something even without help you can do, like Harvard business people, MBA. So for the three kind of micro development trajectory, if you're working on a future development zone, they will show your trajectory is kind of very chaotic. If you're working on the proximate development zone, you are struggling, sometimes you're happy, sometimes you're upset, and happy again, upset again. That's actually a very healthy sign of you're making progress. But if you are sit there, almost fell asleep, and you feel didn't learn anything, which means sometimes means that you are very good, means that this kind of knowledge you know a lot about it. How do you translate this four kind of trends? If you move from proximate development zone to the future development zone, actually you will show the regression. If you are working on the future development zone, actually you will show the disorganization kind of trend. If you move down from proximate development zone to the existing development zone, you will show improvement. If you're working on this kind of zone over one semester, therefore you will show this kind of stabilization kind of trend. See? How we view learning, how we view our progress based on this kind of model actually changing a lot. I will be not very happy if I feel very happy. I'll be very happy if I don't feel very happy today and I feel happy tomorrow. If I feel unhappy all the time, definitely I have to think about how do I do, right? Okay. So the conclusion, just two questions we asked at the beginning, is that micro development of learning sets is a process of pattern changing rather than linear progression. Today, not necessarily have to be better than tomorrow, or yesterday. And tomorrow, not necessarily have to be worse than today. The matter is a kind of pattern changing rather than linear progression. And also the second question is that learning sets actually there's a dynamic mechanism underlying this kind of pattern change. If the growth rate is too high, learn calculus within 1 second. Every people will feel overwhelming because the growth rate is too high. If we learn something micro development within 2 hours, like today's class, therefore we learn something but not solid yet. But if we learn something, we know like something we know 10 years ago, and if I talk about today, therefore, the growth rate is too low. So there's not growth, actually a substantial growth take place.
Could we elaborate a little on the idea that a fast growth rate actually can be a problem? I think that's what you just said, right? I think that's what your data
you
said.
Might say a few words about the Piaget.
That's the Piaget effect. If you're interested in that, that's where promoting early development, Piaget said, pushing it beyond natural limits can actually create negative long-term problems. But I'm thinking just of something simpler than that, which is that if you're trying to move quickly from not knowing very much to knowing a whole lot in an area, you get in trouble fast. That's what your growth model shows anyway. Mm-hmm. That if you try to move up too quickly, you end up with a very unstable growth patterns, collapsing all the time, not really establishing a stable skill levels that eventually move away from lots of wild ups and downs to a more stable skilled response, right?
Yes.
So, that's a different idea from the more traditional one, which is that if I learn fast, then I must be smart, right? So it's the traditional model built into IQ tests is basically that when, that smart people learn quickly and develop.
The more the better,
right.
The faster the better.
Right.
But actually, dynamic modeling can show us this kind of process, micro development wise, it's not that simple. And also, you see, there's a sort of a magic effect. Sometimes you smile to one little kid, just for 1 second, actually change his life, right? So, in other words, education, as a teacher, we're all thinking, today I'm going to lecture 2 hours. Therefore, linear-wise, people can learn something 1 hour. But actually, it's not that. It's non-linear kind of income-outcome relationship. Sometimes, I stop here. Stop right now. Probably you learn more than I keep lecturing, right? So that is some kind of. I think the idea of education approach probably is create some non-linear magic effect that I teach you 1 second, but later can have a huge kind of impact, just like the butterfly effect. That's something we probably as an education can pursue. How do we create some kind of nonlinear, dynamic kind of learning trajectory for our students? I see there's a hand here.
It seems like intuitively, like this approach makes an awful lot of sense, particularly when looking at really complex systems like education. But what I was really struck by is how much statistical expertise this would seem to require. And what I wonder is how much that will deter people from being able to go into this and really look at these problems that need to be looked at in this very complex way, because it seems like you would really need to understand statistics at a level that obviously people struggle with. So what are your thoughts on that?
If we're going to be ride a bicycle, and then someday we think, better we learn to drive a car. But learning to drive a car takes 10 years to drive. No people will drive a car, right? But however, it has to be worthwhile to learn to drive a car within a reasonable period of time and have a reasonable, decent kind of results. If you ask me about my own experience, I think I go through at least 5 years. But if you ask Kurt or Paul Van Geer, they probably tell you 20 years. If you talk about some of you here, 1 year, 1 semester, probably get into this kind of a frontier very soon. Just like, 100 years ago, we learned mean, how to calculate mean, take about 1 year. But right now, in a statistics class, we just click the button and the mean come up within 1 second. So it depends on the how field developed and how this kind of training built into something so that people, the learning effectiveness has been substantially improved. Does that answer your question? Yeah, that's the kind of dynamic answer. But I will never, like Kurt, I learned from Kurt that I never give you a very specific answer. But that's the best answer. I remember when I got into the doctor program, the tradition that the chair of the department have to call, no matter what corner, Iraq or, you know, Pakistan. People have to call you and say, congratulations. So at that time, Kurt, the chair, and they called me in Vancouver when I was studying in Vancouver. So I asked Kurt, after congratulations, Kurt asked me, do you have any questions? I said, yes. Why would be the best model of the best students? Because I think if you give me the model, I can just follow what you told me, right? What, Kurt, do you remember what you say? Well, it depends. I was very disappointed at the time, you know. A Harvard University professor and the chair of the department gave me that answer, you know. And later I know this is the best answer that I have learned. It really depends. Depends on different kind of situation, different kind of issues.
Was helping a student too much, is that going to get them into the zone of confusion?
Oh, that is sometimes hard to say in this specific project, because I only answer the question people ask. So my answer would not be the reason for people, cause people confusion more and more. Because they have to have the question first. But in general, in learning, I think help is not always help. Right? It really depends. Well, learning is really a socialization process. I like the ecology, you know, answer some of the questions people have. How long did they take to get into the field? I think this is my committee member, four people there, and also some students, Jeff Stewart, David Stevenson, Alina, and also some of the foundations, and these are the our own professors. And those are the people who are outside of professors, and especially Robbie Case. He died too early, but he is the kind of model, really show how to be a good researcher. So, sum up a little bit. We talk about dynamic phenomena, very complicated, like a Michael DeVon. Dynamic research, if we are doing the dynamic research, first of all, we need to focus on dynamic phenomena and then ask dynamic questions, collecting dynamic data and analyze data dynamically and also interpret the data as using a dynamic system. And then the dynamic modeling, actually there's many, many kind of, at least 100 kind of dynamic method. And for example, computer-based thought of experience based on dynamic theories, and we learn, and we will learn later more about neural network dynamic growth modeling, this one, and a system dynamic modeling, and a dynamic system modeling. This kind of, there's many kind of, so that's what I mean. This is a case to show what we do. And also I think most important thing at the end of this class is that we need to make ourselves as a dynamic thinkers, so therefore we can study the thinking and make sense of the cognition, development, emotion, and even brain. Thanks.